Well, you know, there's a growing body of scientists who are venturing into this domain of spirituality now. Dr. Goswami is one of them. We'll talk more with him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, now you're a physicist, but what do you mean by open our hearts?
Very good question. How does opening our heart become a question of physics? Well, this concept of consciousness is the ground of being allows us to conceptualize two quite distinct things. One is our feeling, and the other is the material body that we sense. These two things together. What is the connector? They are very disparate things, and therefore they could not communicate with signals because there is nothing common between them. But in the new science, consciousness can mediate their interaction. So how are feelings related to our body? It is very simple. Feelings come from what I call vital energy body. It is the movement of vital energy that we really feel. And where do vital energies come from? They are movement of blueprints of form, not form like we have organs, liver, brain. They are organs, right? They are physical organs. But they are made from blueprints, like an architect makes the house from a blueprint. These blueprints of form are called morphogenetic field. That's the term that Rupert Sheldrake used, one of the first to use. And they are non-local. Consciousness is responsible for that non-local capacity to put together this blueprint of form and then represent them in the organs. So then these organs, their function has an associated vital component, vital movement. So associated with our organ, we have these feelings that come up. Everybody knows about the feeling of love to be centered in the region of the heart. Why? It's not directly connected with the heart, but there is another organ in the region of the heart called the thymus gland, which is part of the immune system. What does the immune system do? It distinguishes me and not me. So the job of the immune system is to kill off all the intruder molecules like a bacteria, like a virus. It tries to kill them off, any intruder substance. So if the immune system, my immune system, agrees with somebody else's immune system not to reject, but to accept it as part of me, to extend myself to another person, isn't that what love is about? So our falling in love is an agreement of our immune system. That's as simple as it is. And you see now how physics centers that non-local ability of non-local communication.
And isn't it fascinating how you can click with somebody and then you won't click with that other person?
Yeah, exactly. You don't click with some people, and you do click with some people, and sometimes we click and then we fall out of click. So all these mysteries can be solved by recognizing these correlated movements of the organs with the morphogenetic fields. When they are in synchrony, we are in good health. We feel vitality. When there is a lack of synchrony, we are out of health, we are out of love, all kinds of problems arise.
Sickness, everything.
Sickness, everything. Pain. Pain is a lack of synchrony between the vital energies and the physical body.
Bring consciousness into this, doctor, if you would for a moment.
So consciousness is the mediator between these great experiences that we have. Without consciousness mediating, we really would have very disjointed experiences. There would be no unity of experience. I mean, look, I see a car. And immediately thought comes, this is a car. It's a unity of experience. No, we see a car, and then 5 minutes later, we don't have a thought like, I see a car. I mean, that just doesn't happen. There is a instant communication that requires this non-locality, non-local consciousness. So the car, and it is a car, the meaning, the mental meaning, is coming at the same time. Without any signal, without taking any time.
If people have that capability of tapping into this subconscious world, they could do all kinds of things, couldn't they?
Absolutely. So if we could connect to this non-local consciousness, these are the spiritual experiences that people talk about. Sometimes we say we have a creative quantum leap. We discontinuously jump into this non-local consciousness. And suppose we develop this ability to jump into non-local consciousness in a conscious way. And that is what spiritual traditions try to teach us.
You've talked about three components of personal transformation: right thinking, right living, right livelihood. Let's go through each one. What do you mean by right thinking?
Well, right thinking is not to think that matter is the basis of everything, because matter cannot explain the value.
As you used to think, right?
As we used to think, right? And matter cannot explain meaning. And so if we believe in the supremacy of matter, we miss out on the most important things of the world, which is our subtle experiences. So that's right thinking. We have to come to a worldview that is based on the primacy of consciousness.
Right.
So knowing this worldview, this is the beautiful part of it, George. Knowing this worldview, we can know everything else, because everything else follows. The material worldview is exclusive. The values don't follow from it. Meaning doesn't come from it. We just say that, well, there is no meaning, there is no values. That's what our conclusion is. It excludes a part of our experiences. Our experiences, there is value. Everybody intuits that there is value. Everybody intuits that there is a distinction between good and evil. But with materialism, it is value-free. There is no values, because matter cannot process values, meanings, etc. So it's an exclusive science. Whereas spirituality, this new science based on primacy of consciousness, is an inclusive science. It does not throw away materialist science. Materialist science is part of it, but it augments it with a new science, science of the subtle. And this is where the power of the new science is. So right thinking is to waking up to that power. Right living is now to be empowered by that right thinking. Now we have discovered that consciousness is the ground of being, as you said. How do we access non-local consciousness? So we learn right living. A very important component of right living is a principle that I flippantly call do-be-do-be-do. We learn to relax. We learn to relax within our activity. We don't just constantly focus on acting, do-do-do. Instead, we also focus on being. Why? Because when we are, it turns out that quantum movements of possibility proliferate. Possibilities become even more possibilities. And if you have more possibilities to choose from, obviously your chance of choosing the creative is greater. So in that way, by combining doing and being in our pattern of living, we become more creative. We become more spiritual. We make more room for discontinuous movements of consciousness. That's right living. And why do we need right livelihood? If your livelihood is so boring, you know, like those assembly line jobs, then you come home and your mind is so tired, all you can do is to plop before the TV. Who can blame?
Yeah, you can't blame somebody.
Right? So we need right livelihood, a livelihood that will have meaning processing built into it, that will have some spare time, that will have some capacity for relaxation, that will enable people to process which is meaningful, enable people to have relationships. You know, relationship is time consuming. If you don't give the time, then what do? It becomes very mechanical. You go to bed, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and that's it. There's no relationship.
A friend of mine back in after high school, he went to work for Ford Motor Company on the production line, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was doing exactly what you were saying. It was just a job that was, you know, stressful, and it wipes you out when you're done. But he had a hobby, and his hobby was he loved to go hunting. I could never understand it. I've never been a hunter. My son is. He loves it.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate of guns and, you know, privacy rights and things like that, but you know, he was a hunter. That was his way out. And so what he did is he took pieces of what you just said, and, you know, his livelihood was working at the automobile company, and he made some pretty good money there working on the assembly line. Yet, you know, you couldn't do that every night. You'd go crazy. So he used hunting as his little outlet, and it was relaxing for him, and it worked for him.
Yeah. A friend of mine once told me he was also hooked on to every weekend he would go camping. And he said that it's camping that enables me to work at an assembly line job.
Yes. It works for them. That once they realize what that outlet is, whatever it is, you know, somebody wants to play pool or go bowling or whatever, it works for them.
Exactly. It's that, just that relaxation. It's the relaxation which expands our consciousness, brings us closer to wholeness. And this is what happiness is about. So they become happy. They are able to intuit that there is more to life than making money. There is more to life than just learning to do a job. And this is where meaning gradually enters back into life. Values enter back into life. The capacity for relationship increases. And this is what we need. So right livelihood is to change society in such a way that there will be a modicum. I'm not saying that every job needs to be meaningful. We are not ready for that yet. But a modicum of meaningful jobs where more than just a few handful of people will have the capacity, will have the prerogative, will have the opportunity to explore meaning.
Where does discontinuity fit into all this?
Discontinuity is how we discover new meaning. If we allow continuity to reign our life, as conservatives like, because they don't want change, mm-hmm. then we never have new meaning. We never have any role for creativity. But then how does change come at all? Change cannot come in our... So environment always changes. And we cannot solve environmental problems always with a rehash of what we know, what is already there. We need new meaning. We need new thinking. How do we get them? By being creative. And creativity requires these quantum leaps, like that electron which goes between orbits in a discontinuous jump without going through the intervening space. Similarly, we need a discontinuous change in thought.
If you could answer one question that you've always wanted to ask, what would that question be?
You have to ask me the question.
Yeah.
How would I know the one question that, well, look, I'm curious about so many things. You know, right now, my curiosity maximally expands towards how to develop, you know, the details of a spiritual economics. I already have understood the basic elements of it, but I want to know the details. So right now, at this moment, if you tell me, okay, what are the questions that you most want to be answered, I would say questions of spiritual economics. How to spiritualize economics?
Ah, you think we'll ever get those answers?
I think so. The basic idea could be as simple as saying that we have to bring in subtle energies, subtle aspects of our life into the economic equation. You know, Adam Smith was a very spiritual man. This is not very well known. Many people think Adam Smith must have been materialist. They identify capitalism with materialism. It's just not true. Capitalism is a wonderful system. Adam Smith did the best he could that was possible in his time, because science at that time was talking about matter, so he equated human needs as material needs. If he had the knowledge that we have now, he would have said, no, we need not only material stuff, we also need happiness, we also need meaning, we also need vital energies, vitality. So all of these needs would have to be satisfied. And what best to satisfy them than build an economy which will have these various components? Why can't we think of production of meaning? Actually, we do already a little bit at the universities, production of meaning. Why can't we have production of values? That's what the purpose of religion used to be. So in this way, we can actually because we can now quantify these subtle energies a lot. By taking advantage of that, we can bring these subtle aspects into the economy, and so we then supplement the idea of gross domestic product also with a happiness index of happy living.
When you talk about happiness, you have a theory of creative evolution. What is that?
Well, I was talking about this earlier. You know, Darwinian evolution is continuous.
Right.
So that's the conditioned part of evolution. Evolution where nature adjusts to changes of environment by selecting those variations in organisms that help the organism to survive. So it's really an adaptation theory. To make real change, we need creative quantum leaps. So that's creative evolution. Creative evolution has a quantum part and a classical Newtonian part. The Newtonian part we call Darwinism. Darwin discovered it. Now we are discovering this new quantum part where we need to make a quantum leap. Consciousness makes a quantum leap, and that's what leads to macro evolution of a species to another. You know, when you think about the enormity of the problem that is to be solved when the reptile has given rise to an egg, but this egg, when it bursts open, a bird flows out of it. I mean, imagine the enormity of this change. How could this happen in a continuous way? So that is what discontinuous quantum leaps are needed to conceptualize.
Do you think this universe is alive?
I think the universe is very much alive. The universe is alive and conscious. The universe is very much alive and conscious and purposeful. And the purpose is to manifest those great archetypes, Platonic terms, you know, love, beauty, justice, truth, goodness. Those are the things that we are moving towards. Look, several hundred years back, you know, we used to live literally the cowboy movies, you know. People could move into a bar and could be killed. Mm-hmm. Does such a thing happen today? Well, today, if a person comes and kills somebody, we call it a major tragedy. But these major tragedies used to happen just 100 years ago, routinely, you know. Right on the streets. Yeah. And we have changed. We have changed. We have changed enormously. This is the evolution of consciousness that we can see the non-Darwinian component of it. In Darwinism, it never could have happened that way.
Yet not everybody has that capability, or do they have the capability, they just can't do it?
Well, everybody has the potential capacity to negate the tendencies of negative emotion, tendencies of violence. One really has to delve into positivity. One has to build positive emotional brain circuit. And that takes creativity. That takes exploration. That takes engagement. You know, there is the saying that fake it before you can make it. But to fake it, you have to have faith. Where does that faith to fake come from? That faith comes from a creative quantum leap that it really is okay to love. And I really can love. I don't have to be violent, although the tendency is built into me. When somebody does not act according to my wishes, I have a tendency of not liking it, and I have the tendency to become angry, and then I may become so angry that I become violent. But the creative realization is that I don't have to be. I don't have to be, and I instead can really love the person and not become violent just because the person is not agreeing with me. That capacity.
Your latest work available at major bookstores?
Yes. This book, How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization, is now available in Amazon and also in major bookstores.
All over the place. All right. Will you stay with us, Doctor? We're going to come back in just a moment. I want to get your take on 2012. So many people believe that there could be a catastrophe. We'll find out what you say about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. You know, if you're a Coast Insider Streamlink member, you know for just pennies a day, you get podcasting and automatic downloads of shows directly into your computer desk or MP3 player. But we've also expanded the full show library as well. You've got access to multi-year downloads. You're right at your fingertip. Hundreds of favorite Coast to Coast shows right there to listen to, collect, take with you wherever you go. You've got access now to the whole library of the Art Bell Classic Somewhere in Time shows as well. And you participate in the fun chat sessions a couple times a month as well. There's never been a better time to join and become a Streamlink Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com. You can sign up on our secure servers. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Amit Goswami. Doctor, what do you think about 2012? There's a camp out there that thinks we're in for a huge catastrophe. Some other people say, no, a moment of enlightenment. How about you?
I went to a conference to give a talk about this just last year to Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the supporters are already changing the tunes. It's no longer 2012. It's now 2033. So I think the real interpretation of this phenomenon is something that we intuit. Something real that we intuit is that in order for change to come, often we have to have catastrophe, because then only it's like a deadline. You know, I'm sure, George, in your life, without deadline, you probably cannot be as productive as you are.
I live by the clock.
See what I mean? So it's like we need that deadline to remind us, and that's what crisis brings us. They give us deadline. We have to do something or we cannot survive. So that survival instinct gets thrown in along with creativity, and that helps us beyond that threshold of, you know, lethargy, et cetera. We postpone. But crisis is so compulsory that they don't allow us to postpone anymore. So that's what we need from catastrophes. And this is where, 2012 is like a deadline. Okay, so solve the problem, at least some of the problem, at least start working with the problem. And you know, thanks to our president, we have begun to work on some of the problems. So, you know, I am optimistic.
Are you a believer in life out there in space, intelligent life?
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt about it, because, there are many planets like ours, and that part is just fine. We have other life, extraterrestrial life. But, you know, I'll tell you something, though. We can never directly communicate with this extraterrestrial life with local signals, or we cannot visit these extraterrestrial planets. So I don't think we should become too excited about it unless we really hone on to the messages of the new science. Because in the new science, there is non-locality. And that puts an entire different take on the subject of extraterrestrial life. So I think in the new science, we can look at phenomena where such communication is actually taking place. You know, and I will go a little bit out on the limb to put this on your show. I don't know even if you will approve, but there are, you know, this UFO sighting phenomena that is going on for quite a while. It could be a psychological phenomenon, as Carl Jung assumed. It could be that way, but it could also be a reality, but very differently from the material level of thinking that we do. It's definitely no life being can come from another planet to all these distances that they have to cover to our planet. That is impossible. Only machines could do it. But of course, that has other problems, because if machines could do it, why hasn't machine done that already? So we get bogged down into these paradoxes. But there is a solution: non-local communication, non-local aspects of science. We become so technologically advanced in the subtle dimensions that we can actually travel. That is not ruled out anymore, although it sounds very, very far out at this stage of our understanding. But, you know, really, we are making leaps and bounds in creativity in the subtle arenas. I told you before that we already can quantify subtle energy measurements. And so if subtle technologies start developing, as I think they will in the coming decades, and then let another few hundred years go, then we may have such technologies at hand. Who knows? I think this is the time to keep an open mind about extraterrestrial life and even communication with extraterrestrial life, but not in the old materialist way. That's impossible, because there just isn't enough time for a human to traverse billions of light years and come to our planet Earth.
In ancient India, they implied that there were wars in the heavens, atomic wars in the heavens. I have to believe something happened.
Well, those are examples of extraterrestrial beings. If you want to project from our UFO experiences of this time, where we are projecting beings that come in a flying saucer. This is today's imagery, today's metaphor. Whereas in the olden days, the metaphors were different, but the idea may be the same. And the idea is always about these encounters with beings that have very much different powers than we have. They have manifested much of the non-local discontinuity-based power that we are just beginning to explore. So when you put it in this frame of reference, you don't have to discard them right away. I'm not saying become a believer in this. No, absolutely not. But we at least could be open-minded to study this kind of phenomenon. We should not be closed-minded just because we cannot do it in materialist science does not mean that we cannot do it at all.
That's a good point. Let's take some calls here. We'll go to Anchorage, Alaska. Matthew's up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Matthew.
Yes, I'd like to ask about the split, the double slit experiment. Does that experiment prove that consciousness collapses the wave function?
Yeah.
And how else would it do? How else would the observer affect that collapse?
Well, you can explain the double slit by consciousness collapses the wave function, that kind of hypothesis. Any other explanation turns out to be logically faulty. So you are right in your assertion. Yes, we need the hypothesis of consciousness is the ground of being, and it is consciousness downward causation, causal power of consciousness that changes the waves of possibility that enables an electron to pass through both slits at the same time to become an actualized particle on a photographic plate. This cannot be explained on any other basis. All materialist theories fall flat. They are contradictory. They are paradoxical. And so you are completely right. We need to postulate consciousness as the ground of being and consciousness as causal power to explain this experiment.
You've talked about scientific evidence for the survival of death, after death, and reincarnation. Can you give me some examples?
Well, there are just so many. I mean, survival of death, of course, near-death experiences are fantastically well-documented experiments. You know, people have surgery. Their heart has stopped. There is no EEG machine giving any brain waves. So the person is brain dead. But the doctors are performing a surgery to revive this person, right? And this person has an experience, but he's dead. How can he have an experience? But when he wakes up, he remembers. He remembers that he was out on the ceiling and he saw the doctor use their scalpels and whatever else in such specific details. The doctor said, how could he know that? Because this was not planned before. This was special for this particular surgery. This is not a commonplace thing that we do. So this kind of evidence, you know, Michael Sabom wrote a book. He's a surgeon himself, cardiac surgeon. And he wrote a book, data after data of this kind, you know, this otoscopic experiences, otoscopic vision. How could people have that? In the new view, we say, well, because what happens is that there is existence after death, so-called death, except that the identity shifts from the physical to the subtle body. And so the person feels out of the body. And, of course, the experiences cannot happen at the time because wave functions or possibilities cannot collapse into actuality, but they collapse after the person is revived. Then the whole chain of events that took place during this period becomes actualized at one fell swoop. And this is why the person remembers that, okay, this and this and this and this happened. Okay, yeah. So that is one kind of example, survival after death. For reincarnation, there are, again, many, many experiences. There was a guy named Stevenson. He was a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia Medical Center, Ian Stevenson.
Ian, yep.
And he has collected such complete data of so many reincarnational recalls. Little kids, they start remembering past lives. And they can be verified. Like one kid remembered that Well, okay, she was taken to the village, which she was remembering that she was born in.
That's right.
So Stevenson took her to this village, and then she recognized the house that she lived in, and she goes into the house. And all of a sudden, she says, you know, there's a hidden compartment in this house where there is some money. And so they went to the hidden compartment, found it, and then, strangely, the money that was there really was old money, corresponding to the time that this girl was talking about. This is not new money that is put there. It's a hoax. It's old money that existed during that period when the girl claimed to have been in her past incarnation. So this kind of evidence is so solid. Now, there are also other kinds of evidence, like, you know, I am of the opinion, as was Ian Stevenson, that geniuses cannot be explained without the idea of reincarnation. We learn every life, and we learn and learn and learn and develop such expertise that at one life we become a genius. So Mozart's genius, you know, the ability of learning to formulate musical scores at the age of six, that was not done in the 6 years of his life, this incarnation, but it was the result of many other past incarnations where he became proficient in musical score writing. Let's, and this is why he was such a great genius in this particular life that we know about.
Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Gary's with us, east of the Rockies. Hi, Gary.
Hey, hi, guys. Good evening.
You too.
I've got two opinions and one question. One, who created the ETs? And the other one is... I believe that the ETs might be, not like we think, but possibly maybe 100 to 200,000 years ahead of us, not like we think. Okay, but getting to the question that I have, I forgot his name. I'll call you Doctor. Doctor, you seem to be taking, I'm a Catholic, and I believe very strongly in the Bible, and you seem to be confusing and getting it more confused, that it is just so simple that Jesus said, very simply, give praise and glory to God in the highest, his Father, and things will be given to you, answers will be given to you, if you do the right thing and give him the praise and the glory. And you're turning all that around and taking God the Father almost completely out of the picture by the way you are trying to explain this very complicated thing going in your head.
God the Father is actually fine. You know, Gary, let me stop you right there, because I get the purport of your question. If I have demeaned your faith, I really apologize to you. But the understanding of God the Father is the basic key. If you think of God the Father as a human father, you were wrong. That's all I was saying. That's too simplistic. It's not a human being that Jesus is talking about. Jesus is talking about a being, no question, a being. Father in the source, in the sense of a source. Who is Father? Father gives us the genes, right? Father in that sense is the source of us, from where we come. And we come from consciousness. In that sense, the science that we are developing now, that integrates science and spirituality, is giving a scientifically acceptable picture of God. So in that sense, but not in the sense that I am demeaning your faith. Absolutely not. That is not my intention. Just as Jesus said, I'm here to save the faith, not destroy it. I am likewise. Quantum physicists are here to save the faith, not destroy it. We are integrating. We are including faith within science. Okay?
And that's important too.
Yes.
We're going to take another hour of calls with you in just a moment. Let's see if we can get one more in. Let's go to Dan in Peekskill, New York. Go ahead, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I understand that your guest said that it's impossible for an advanced life form to travel through the cosmos.
Yes, if you use local means.
Yeah,
if
wait a minute.
You want to jump on a vehicle and then, like an airplane, you come from that place to here.
Current
that's
technology.
Impossible.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, it's not impossible, because what you want to do is you expect all advanced life forms that would be a lot more advanced than humans to be as retarded, if I may use that word, as the human race. I mean, if we've gotten to the airplane flight in 1903, orbital flight in 61, and the first lunar flight in 69, you can't expect all life forms to be that low class.
You were completely right.
Only
that is also
only
my
that
point.
Way. If that's what we are trying to do, if we're trying to go out to the cosmos and travel, if that's what allegedly NASA led us to believe, then who's to say that somebody else hasn't beaten us to the punch?
What?
And another thing, too.
I am actually
ingredients for life out there in the universe.
Can I stop you? Because I can answer your question already. I get your question. It's a legitimate question. All I said, I actually am agreeing with you. You didn't hear me properly, I think. I agree with you. All I'm saying is that if one tries to do it with local means, material means, then theory of relativity and physics proves us wrong. We cannot do it that way. And that for that reason, the physicists who conclude that way are not wrong. They are right. But if you keep yourself to the material means only, we have now discovered non-material means. We have the subtle energies that I'm talking about. We have these supramental dimensions that I'm talking about. So using those means, of course we can do it. And that is what the nature of future technology is going to be. There is not much technological future if we keep on to the material domain of reality. That technological advances, just look around you. It's already almost at the end. You know, computers are going to grow a little bit more, but not too much more, because we are already close to the atomic dimension. And beyond that, there is no such advancement that is possible. So we are reaching the end of the material era of humanity. Next will come the subtle era. And the new science says that possibilities are almost unlimited. Yes, we can certainly. I absolutely believe with you that, yes, certainly, there can be advanced civilization who can visit us. And this is why I raised the very, very debatable and very, very iffy issue of UFOs on this show.
Doctor, we've got one final hour to go with you, and we'll take final calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.